Welcome to Nap Time, the podcast where two mostly fully functional adults attempt to have stimulating conversation about their favorite books and movies and comics around their sleeping child. On today's episode, we'll be talking about Saga, Volume 1. Saga is a comic series written by Brian Vaughn and illustrated by Fiona Staples. This week we'll be talking about chapters 1 through 6. So, full spoilers for, you know, those chapters. Hi, I'm Alex.
I'm Liz.
Welcome.
So good to be here again with you in our kitchen.
Yes. With our little Alana and Hazel pop figure.
It's so cute. We almost didn't get it because we're trying to not just like own a ton of things, but
unless we roll if pop figures are like a whole,
yeah,
a whole of
you have to have them all,
every lost, single version lost of them. Money and sadness, but they're so cool.
And this one was Alana holding baby Hazel, so How could we not?
Yes,
we even left the store without it and got dinner.
And then went back and bought it.
Because it had to happen.
All right. Here's what happened in chapters 1 through 6.
Yes, synopsizes.
Alana and Marco, former soldiers of the planet Landfall and its moon Wreath, respectively, are having a baby. Like, literally, right now, they are having a baby. Okay, let's go. They're also on the run from Landfallian and Wreath forces. Turns out you aren't exactly looked at kindly as defectors in a war, especially defectors on the opposite sides of a decades-long conflict who have also procreated.
Oops.
The new family escapes and is on the run, seeking the so-called rocket ship forest. Along the way, they see more of the destruction wrought on the planet Cleave by their people's war and are almost killed by the Stock, one of at least two freelancers sent after the family. The Stock is scared away by some ghosts of those who have died on Cleave, the planet where they are right now, one of whom Alana allows to bond to their daughter Hazel's soul. As this ghost, Isabel can provide them a way to snow, which is the only relief that Marco can seek for his wound from the Stock. Meanwhile, accompanied by his partner Lion Cat, a cat who detects lies,
and is awesome,
the Will, the Stock's ex-lover and another freelancer sent after our heroes, decides to seek consolation on the planet Sextillion, after learning that the Stock has been set on the same job. Led into the bowels of what the pleasure resort has to offer, the Will is offered a 6-year-old slave girl to sate his desires. Disgusted, the Will attempts to free the girl by crushing her groomer's head, but is stopped by Mama Sun. Oh, Mama Sun.
Oh.
While the Will calls the Stock in order to enlist her help and resources in freeing the girl, the Stock is killed by Prince Robot IV of the Robot Kingdom, one of Landfall's most important allies. Four is also set upon seeking out our heroes, at the behest of Landfall and his father, the King, to eliminate embarrassment for the hierarchy and its potential effects on the war. Four is going a little crazy, probably suffering PTSD after an extended military campaign, and now is a father-to-be himself. Alana, Marco, Hazel, and Isabel finally make it to the rocket ship forest. Marco, in order to cement his pacifist vows and gain them access to an organic tree rocket ship, breaks his family heirloom sword. The family take off for quietus in their new home/vehicle, but are surprised by new guests, Marco's warrior parents, drawn by the breaking of the sword. Robot IV will also make for quietus, as he discovers it's the home of D. Oswald Heist, an author that Alana was known to have read and loved.
Dun dun dun.
Set up.
Cliffhanger.
Every chapter ends with a cliffhanger. Especially in these first ones.
Oh my gosh, yes. It's so fast paced. I think I read the first time I read it, like the whole thing in 20 minutes. Because I was just like, can't stop.
Yeah. I know. After these first few, finally, there's some stories that like last a while. But I know at first it was like, Oh my gosh, just so much
there's stuff, there's so many things and explosions, and it starts with them giving birth. Mm-hmm. Literally, that's the first like five pages, maybe not five pages, but at least the first, like, good handful of panels is Alana giving birth to Hazel, and it's wonderful.
Which...
and hilarious.
I think, like, and you, I mean, you can say something into this too, but, like, I know for both of us, I think the cover got us super interested.
It was why that we started reading it.
Right. And then...
those first few panels is...
the cover got me interested, like, yep. And those first few panels was like, okay, mm-hmm. We'll stay around.
And keeping in mind that we found this when Perrin was, like, what, 4 or 5 months old? So right. We were still really fresh off of having given birth ourselves. And the cover, to explain, for those of you who have not seen it, why Saga Volume 1 just totally grabbed my attention... was that Alana is brazenly breastfeeding without a cover on the cover. And as a coverless breastfeeder myself, and it's something that I feel very much undue anxiety about just because of our culture's sensitivities. It just made me really happy to see these people. And it wasn't even like, it wasn't sexualized. Either, but she was just like standing there holding a gun, breastfeeding her child. Like, this is just what you do. And in the first few pages after she gives birth, like, she just immediately breastfeeds. There's not even a conversation about it. It just happens. And so for me, in the midst of having some of my own breastfeeding struggles, I loved that. But they're like, yeah, this is natural. This is normal. There's not anything weird or sexual about it. It's just what you do. So that's why I was sucked into it right out the gate.
Yeah. I know. It was so...
and the way that they presented birth was just really beautiful, too. Mm-hmm. And Marco crying, holding their bloody, gross-looking infant thing. It's a girl.
I love right when he feels. Cuts the umbilical cord with his teeth.
I didn't expect so much gristle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just love them. And just all the conversation that they have. About the wing bleeding and stuff. But he's like, I thought we weren't going to do any weird, like, political, yeah. Religious. And she's like, it's not religious. It's, like, cultural heritage. She's like, mutilating an infant. And that's something I love about this series in general, is the way that they have commentary on things in our culture, but from, like, sideways. Yeah. This is a conversation that someone might have about, say, like, circumcision, but
right.
They're having it about her wings instead.
Right. Yeah. No, it's funny. I should have researched. I'm curious about the author, about Vaughn and Staples, like, their, where they're at in life, because I feel like...
they definitely have kids.
Yeah. One or both of them. I mean, it was just very real. Mm-hmm. And
I mean, she was very lucid for where she was in giving birth.
Right.
But you kind of have to be in, especially in something like this. And it's part of how we're meeting her, if she was actually
right.
Truly.
Right.
She wouldn't be talking like right. That. So. Right.
No, that's fair.
But I liked it. It was, and it was a really beautiful way to introduce us to them as a couple. Mm-hmm. That Alana is insecure and just really wants to be loved by Marco. And Marco is just so totally sold over her that he tells her she's never looked more beautiful. And she immediately comes back with, like, yeah, because there's nothing sexier than a fat woman spread eagle popping a baby out in a garage. And I like it. It very quickly sets up, like, who they are as characters, that Marco pretty much always sees the best in everything and Alana does not.
And I like that they're clearly, like, in love and committed, but also it's, like, new and just crazy. Mm-hmm. And they're like, having a baby, and, like, he gets hurt and he, like, mumbles Gwendolyn's name. And
she's, oh my, like, gosh, yeah.
What? And
she's ready to rip his heart out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But then also, as soon as he regains consciousness, the first thing she does is runs over and kisses him. And right. then she's like, oh, also.
No, wait a minute.
Who is Gwendolyn?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, glad you're alive, but now make sure you stay that way.
Mm-hmm. As I was rereading, I was thinking about, though, even though the beginning is really what pulled me into it, made me so interested, you know, but then I was just remembering how, especially the first time reading it, that some of the scenes, they're just like so jolting.
Oh yeah. And it's just not even things you expect. Like, I had forgotten about when we first meet the Will, the freelancer, that he comes out of his ship. He has this really weird looking maybe Sphinx cat, and then all of a sudden there's this giant creature breathing fire, and he throws a packet of gunpowder into his mouth and blows up its head.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, that just happened. Its head blew up.
Right.
And then it turns right back around and he says something about his union rep. Mm-hmm. And it's just totally casual, as this just crazy thing just happened. Mm-hmm. And it's very jarring and engaging in its juxtaposition.
That scene with the Will reminds me, I mean, from the beginning, it's set up for us that, like, the world we're dealing with is everyone, like, no one's rosy. I mean, like, Alana, they're all pretty gritty people, but they're in a world where, of, like, really bad people, too. Because, I mean, with the Will, he's, like, one of the ladies from Wreath High Command or whatever, and she, like, lies to him. She's like, Marco, he's part of this prophecy or something. Like, why are you hunting him? You
know, that he's going to cause the death of a million innocent souls.
Lying cat, like, lying.
I love lying cat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so she tells him the truth. And then we see the same thing on the other side, that the Landfallians and through the robots are trying to stop it too, because, I mean, it unfolds more later on, but even at the beginning we get that. Because everyone kind of profits from the war, too.
Right. It's become business.
Yeah, and it's like a way of life, you know? And so, I mean, for someone like Marco to want to be, like, a pacifist, it really is, like, very, very subversive in his world.
And that a comment which I forgot about in the beginning of the book, when Prince Robot finds out about them and that they've had a baby, he said, oh, I didn't even think that they could procreate. Like, that it's been, they've been so taught that they are other.
Yeah, they're, right.
That then them being able, not only the fact that they did willingly come together, but that they can willingly come together and create life, is dangerous for the business of war.
Right.
Because other people will get ideas. And they might start seeing each other as, like, people.
Yeah. And it's so, even, it's such, like, an apocalyptic setting, kind of, that, you know, there's this war that's been going on. It's not even really going on the home planets anymore. Mm-hmm. It's basically just outsourced to everywhere. And then people have just joined up and taken sides. So it's like, the world is war, you know?
But then, the idea of outsourcing war is just very interesting. That the people who are fighting and dying aren't even the people who are fighting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it's very... I mean, there's a statement in that anyway. But then what I really like, though, about Marco is that he's like, trying to renounce violence and stuff, but it's, like, really hard.
Right.
You know, even, and especially then when he's, like, trying to protect his family, too. But then he's still, like, committed to it, you know?
When he breaks the chain on his sword to use it again, he says, but remember, no killing. He's like, okay, we'll violence, but we won't kill. Which is mean.
And then I love that, you know, Alana's, like, tentatively for it, but then she stops him from, you know, so it seems like at first she's, like.
Because she does care.
She's not totally, yeah.
She doesn't want him to do something he'll regret.
Right. Yeah. I mean, let's stick with that. Alana and Marco. What do you think of them? That was my main thing with him. I just really like that they're all flawed, but they are heroes in a way because that they are like two people in a world of war trying to kind of stand for something else.
And I just love just how real that they are as characters. And like, that's something that I've like been mind boggled over in every single volume of this, is that I feel like I know them. They make sense. They're relatable. They're me and my friends, you know, but they're aliens fighting this crazy war in this like fantasy, magic, sci-fi world, but they're so normal. And I really love how flawed that they are and complex that they're both in some ways all talk. You know, that Marco talks this big talk about being a pacifist, but inside is this just like raging warmonger who gets off on violence. Whereas then Alana is so much bluster of like, I'm going to shoot you in the face. But actually, and she will when she needs to, but she also is not as hard as she pretends to be. Which I also think is yet again kind of commentary, because I was actually just thinking about today when I'm talking to maybe especially a customer, and I'm saying something to them that I think that they won't like, my voice is very like casual or just matter of fact, but I realize that physically I actually make myself smaller. Like, I roll my shoulders in and kind of pull back. And I just realized that I do that today.
Right.
And I'm like, where did I get that? Why do I do that? But so my voice is doing one thing and my body is doing another. And I feel like Alana does that too. And I think that's a very common thing for women to do, especially. And to either like talk a big talk, but actually in a way of like protecting themselves, like resting bitch face. And, but actually being soft inside, or the opposite. And I lost where I was going with this thought. Then Marco is like in some ways they're both very stereotypically masculine and feminine. And then in other ways they're just totally not.
Right.
And I like that. That they don't know who they are, and they're figuring it out together, and we're figuring it out with them.
Yeah, it's definitely very character driven. I mean, this time through, I'm trying to pay more attention to the worlds and the planets and everything, because I remember the first time, like, I had no idea what's going on. I didn't even really have Landfall and Wreath straight.
Right. Me neither.
So probably like volume 4 or 5 or something.
Same. I had no idea.
Yeah. But then later on, you know, not spoiling anything, but later on, Marco and Alana kind of have some like marriage issues, and it just like tore me apart.
Yeah.
Because we've just been so invested in them and their journey. And also because like literally the world is against them. The world is against them being in love. Like, literally, like, the world is actually against them having a family and against them being happy. And so, yeah, I mean, that they and they set this that out from the beginning, which I think is definitely part of what kept me reading it.
Something that stabbed me in the heart on the first read, and it hit me again this time, was in the very, very beginning. When you've just had this glorious happening of Hazel's been born, then all of a sudden, one of the robot people, which that actually took me a while to remember that the robots were with the wings, right, and the wings are the Landfallians.
Right.
Anyway, yeah. So the robot shows up with some of the wings, and which is a slur, I guess, the wings and the horns.
Wings and the horns.
And then a whole bunch of the Wreathers show up and they get caught in the crossfire. And right before all of the firing happens, Alana Marco just hold on to each other. And Alana looks at him and says, I loved you so much. Mm-hmm. I just like, and especially knowing where they would be, especially her hormonally at that point, and therefore emotionally, and the just sort of like raw place that that statement would have come from. Yeah. Right in the feels. Right in the feels.
Yeah. I love that Hazel is the narrator.
Yes. And the juxtaposition sometimes of her commentary is just brilliant.
So it's at least good that she gets to grow. She even says, and it's unclear how old she means, but in one of the early on, she says, like, because of them, I get to grow old, which could mean I have the chance, or literally she does grow old. Mm-hmm. But, or maybe her as a narrator, she's an adult, but not old.
Right.
Anyway, I don't know where, how, like, long is this supposed to go on?
Yeah. Forever. I want it forever.
She lives into, seems like, adulthood from her narration. Mm-hmm. So that's nice. We don't know how long Alana or Marco will live.
We don't know. They've actually lived longer than I expected either of them to.
Anything else on our mains, our heroes?
I love them. Okay. I'm sure I have lots more thoughts and they'll become more developed as we talk about this more. But yeah, I really appreciate them as leads. That they are the good guys, but they also kind of suck. A lot of times. And they mess up a lot of times.
Yeah.
And I like that.
And then, like, not really counter to that, but just kind of running a similar idea a little differently. You have the Will, who's like, oh my gosh. Just he's just
awful.
I know. At the beginning, you're just like, dude, you are, like, sick. You need help. You're grubby, and like, even though he's put together more than like later on,
he's fit.
But like, he just seems like a mess,
and his cape is all ripped up.
Yeah, and he's angry, and he's mad, and he's lonely.
And I mean, the first thing he does when he realizes that his ex is on the case too is to go to Sextillion.
Yeah, he has a no credit limit.
He's like, I'm just gonna go see how far I can get with this.
What I'm gonna do now.
But then when faced with the 6-year-old slave girl, he is disgusted. He is enraged. And all he wants to do is save her, to the point that he is willing to call said ex to try to get her help to rescue this girl that he owes nothing, but he can't just leave her there.
Yeah, no, and you knew, I think you knew how he was going to react like that in the scene, but there still was that, like, edge of, like, what's going to happen, because, you know, we don't know him yet. Like, I was, you know, the first time I read it, I was, like, hoping, you know, that, like, gosh, please, no.
Like, I don't want to have to stop reading this, but if this happens, I'm going to have to stop reading this.
Right. And then it's weird, like, him in the stock, like, the stock's crazy.
Oh my gosh.
And so, she's so creepy. There's a lot of setup for them, but in the next two volumes, like, I think his story is like one of the best parts, actually. Yeah. At first, while Hazel's like a baby.
Seeing what he's doing and how he's processing, and that he has this job that will give him tons of money, and he's willing to walk away from it to save this girl.
I've been reading, we both have been, but I've been reading Star Wars, like some of Timothy Zahn's Star Wars books. And when I read this, I was like, okay, this is what a smuggler or a bounty hunter is supposed to be like. Okay. As much as I love, like, Lando and Han and Talon Card, I'm like, this is what these people are supposed to be like. Okay.
They're not actually ruffians with morals. They're just like scum, but that have
a breaking point. A baseline.
Yeah, he does have a baseline. There are things he will not do.
Right.
But, I mean, like, he was totally willing to go kill Hazel.
Yeah.
If they wanted him to kill Hazel, he was going to do it. But that's...
But when it was faced, you know, when it confronted him.
Right. Well, and because I think he also, there are lines, because, like, killing Hazel, it's just done. He wouldn't have done it cruelly. She wouldn't even have known. She just would have not existed anymore. But this girl who he ends up calling Sophie is being tortured. Mm-hmm. And that is not okay. That her life is a living death is not okay to him. Because it's still innocence. He wouldn't have been ruining Hazel's innocence by killing her. She would have been done.
Right.
She would have actually been, like, crystallized in her innocence. Mm-hmm. Almost saving her innocence. But Sophie's innocence was being ripped away violently every day.
Mm-hmm. I think that's actually one of the big things in the series is, like, kind of wrestling with that, like, life now versus like death and just kind of like what you're saying, like almost like mercy killing and stuff like that. I mean, a lot of those things kind of come up as we go along, so I'll have to watch for that.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of thought on, and it's a hashtag I frequently use on my personal Instagram, let them be little, to not force Perrin to grow up, let him roll around in the dirt, let him figure out on his own how to use his little giraffe bike, that it's not bad that he's crawling around and pushing it instead of riding on it. And I feel like that's kind of a message, because as the story continues, you know, there's a lot of not like sheltering Hazel, but allowing her to still, trying to let her have a normal childhood. And I think that the Will regrets his childhood, or his lack of a childhood, and the way that his innocence was ripped away. And that like when he sees Sophie, he sees himself, and he is for Sophie what he wishes someone would have been for him.
Well, yeah, him and his
sister.
The brand. Yeah. Just spoiled it. Sorry, everybody. Because we don't know right away they're related.
We'll find out pretty fast, though. But yeah.
Okay.
Oops. Spoilers for a later volume. I don't remember which one. 2, 3?
Yeah, pretty soon. Yeah. Pretty soon. Our other two other kind of big characters. Isabel.
I love Isabel. I love her so much. She's so funny. And of all of the characters, who has the most right to be just like jaded and cruel and evil and uncaring and unkind, she's probably the most loving. And like, yes, she starts out kind of like she's profiting. It's a symbiotic relationship. She's trying to escape, but she really does care about Hazel and genuinely wants to not just hitch a ride on Hazel's soul, but does want to care for her and be a babysitter and help this family. It's not just about profit for her. And she gives advice and it kind of big sisters everybody.
You were an only child, weren't you?
Yeah. And you were supposed to switch boots like 10 minutes ago. But, and she's the one who sticks up for them when all the other ghost kids are like, they're the ones who blew up my village. They're the bad guys. She's like, okay, maybe their people are, but did you see how sweet he was with his child? Did you see how he laid down his sword? Like, they're different. And she's the first one to see them as something good.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Yeah, and I like that because she gives that. I mean, because one, what a bum deal for the people of Cleve.
Right.
Like, hey, you die, but, you know, you still have to stick around and haunt the...
Which I forgot why she was still a ghost. Mm-hmm. That she's supposed to be the spiritual defender of Cleve.
Mm-hmm. It, like, doesn't really work.
Right. They just keep going.
But then it's, you know, like we're saying, kind of the themes of life and death and stuff. That she, like you said, she should be bitter, but also maybe death kind of gives her perspective on life. Like, mm-hmm. you just should be, like, be right. good and, you know, care for them. Because
she can't have the life she wants anymore. She can only be out at night. Mm. And mm-hmm. she can't really touch and interact anymore. She can't have love. She can't have a family. I like the various things she projects, too. Which sure. I don't think she does a lot of in volume.
Not in this one. Yeah. Also, on that, one thing I was thinking, the planet, I like the planet's called Cleve. Probably not intentional at all, but I was thinking, it's just funny that it's called Cleve, because they're having, it's like where they met and where they had their baby, and it's like a biblical thing that like the...
Well, and it's a double meaning too. To that me, well, Cleve, I know I was getting mean, that,
but okay. the man shall cleave to his wife or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then also then it is to break or separate mm-hmm. to...
It was probably intentional.
Probably.
There's so much subtext.
Yeah.
But I actually hadn't thought about that
I didn't catch it the first time.
I just thought it was... I
thought about this
it's thing. Cleve is not a pretty sounding word.
Well, and all their... That's one thing I like about this one too, but also made it confusing at first, is that all the planets have names like that. Well, not all of them, but...
Cleve, Quietus.
Landfall, Wreath. Mm-hmm. Like, they're our words. Mm-hmm. So it's a fantasy. I mean, it's like low fantasy because the magic's not really really developed. I mean, the magic is like Marco's people; they just do magic. But it's more fantasy in that it's like epic. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like the scenes are epic, and
mm-hmm. it's space fantasy.
It's a space opera, I guess.
Yeah. Space opera.
Glad we figured that out.
I love the rocket ship too.
Yes. And again, like such a, I mean, symbolism, you know, that they take refuge in a living thing, you know, mm-hmm. and that like you don't drive a rocket ship, what did she say? You don't steer a rocket ship, you ride it or something like that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I feel like it, they tell it where to go. They have to like almost relate to it to get it to do things. And to, it is like a home and mm-hmm. it's a refuge and it is a spaceship, but it's also a tree and like an ecosystem.
It's organic. Mm-hmm. I love how it looks on the inside too, that it is so organic.
Right. Looks like where the Cuba elves live.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, and then, okay, also, even though it's totally, you know, that's Prince Robot the Fourth, and, like, reading it, I was like, Roman numerals. In my head, I call him IV.
I just call him V, but yeah.
Yeah.
Or IV.
And it's so funny, in my reading everyone calls him IV, like his wife calls him IV, and like probably not,
she's calling him four, but close enough.
Well, who knows, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's just funny, like as I was writing this I was like, wait, how am I gonna say this when I read this synopsis?
Is it four, is it IV, is it IV?
Yeah.
Or V. Occasionally he's just been V in my brain.
I will admit, when I first read this, I didn't really have, I think all my sympathy had been used up by the time I got to his parts, mm-hmm. like with Alana and Marco.
Well, and he's hunting our heroes.
And the Will, well, so is the Will. The Will, but part of it's hindsight with things that happen later. But even when you read the first one, though, I mean, part of it is knowing, getting more of his story later, but you can tell from what they give you that he is suffering from being at war.
Mm-hmm. And like that, the scene where he's talking to that, well, there's the when we first see him with the princess, with his wife,
right.
And they're like making love, and then this like bloody fang or something mm-hmm. pops up in his mm-hmm. viewing, in his face screen.
Yeah.
And he kind of like quite quickly tries to move it away, and then later, and then he can't keep going, and he's like, you know, I'm sorry, we'll try again. And then later he's talking to a soldier, and this just twisted screaming face pops up in his screen, and she's like, and that they weren't talking about anything like that at all. Mm-hmm. And she's like, but it, like, he can't control his screen. It's just flickering. Right. And
that's something I have to watch for too. Is it just him, or is it just he who can't control it, or is it other robots too?
Well, they use their screens.
They use them.
But
with him, it's weird because like it betrays him.
His betrays him all the time.
Yeah.
And that comes up often. But I think it is when they have a very like intense thought. Mm-hmm. And we don't see a lot of the other robots. We mostly see C4.
And then the guy later, Dingo or whatever.
We're not talking about that volume. But, and when he goes to kill the stock, because he sees her gun and she's like, he perceives her as a threat, and he's just found out he's going to have a child. And what pops up in his view screen is the rattle, and he just loses it. Because he's like, you're not going to make my baby an orphan right before the baby's even born. Mm-hmm. And he goes into overkill. Mm-hmm. So I think it is just, it especially with him, it betrays because he's glitching. That he is suffering from his PTSD, and he's glitching.
And I think I liked, well, I don't know if liked is the right word, but I think they did it well, because he's suffering, and it seems like he legitimately thought he was threatened. On the other hand, it's not that he's not at fault either.
Right.
Because he also is kind of just trigger happy. And
well, and because then she didn't have a gun. No. It was, she had the phone.
The phone. Yeah.
The phone. And then the soldiers say, oh, we'll back you up.
Like, right.
It's,
and so it's this, you know, it, there is room to understand it and sympathize with it. And, but on the other hand, it's not saying like, you know, he's like blameless because of his issues, or because he thought he was threatened. It's okay. Right. You know, like, he didn't really take the time to assess the situation.
No.
I mean, on the other hand, the freelancers have a reputation anyway. I mean, without getting so just deep into it. I mean, that definitely relates to a lot of conversations.
But I think he, we're again,
today, you know, with guns and shootings and authority and stuff that, like, I don't know. I just, like, just generally with these, I don't know that they give us a ton of answers, except, you know, like, love one another and have good sex as much as possible. But, and, like, don't kill people as much as possible. But otherwise, they don't necessarily answer a ton of questions, but they handle things really well, I think.
They have a lot of open discussion.
Or at least it's fairly nuanced, generally.
There's lots of open discussion and room to think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Prince Robot is another really good example of people being layered and complex. And it's a very good reminder that people aren't maybe what we think that they are. Because to Alana and Marco, he looks like this crazy villain, and that he's evil, and he wants to destroy them, when in reality, he wants nothing to do with them. He doesn't care about this. He's suffering. He just wants to be with his wife and his soon-to-be baby. He just wants to get this over with and get home. He doesn't give a crap about them. And, but if we were watching from just their perspective, he would look like this And he is an impending evil, but it's again that, you know, you don't know everybody's story.
Well, and yeah, but then I think on the other hand, you're totally right. And the more we read, the more I'm able to give Ivy/4 like a break, you know, and be like, I understand you, because he's suffering under like family obligation and being in a hierarchy and being royalty and having been in this war. Pressure
from his big screen TV dad.
Yeah. On the other hand, you know, Alana and Marco are different, are trapped too, but differently. But they have the courage, when they're presented with an alternative way of life, to do something about it. And as much as he has reasons and it's understandable,
right,
especially in this stage, like, he's just going along with it because it's life, you know. It's the
path of least resistance.
At least right now, he either doesn't have a vision for any other way to do things, or he's not willing to change, or both. So he's under his dad's obligation. On the other hand, he could probably muster the resources to escape with his wife and their kid or something, you know, if he really wanted to, you know.
Right.
Not that it would be easy by any means.
Is that it's not like his personal vendetta at this juncture.
Right.
To hunt them down.
Right.
At this juncture.
Right. I love when we see the picture of, kind of off topic, but when he has the book. What's the name of the book, by the way? I keep forgetting. I somehow remember the author's name.
Oswald Heist.
D. Oswald Heist.
Well, it's because he's also a character.
Yeah. I keep forgetting the name of the book. You can look that up. But when we see his picture at the end, it's like so perfect. The big single eye, but he's got the beard and such an intellectual. Yeah, sure. It's towards the end.
Where is this book? We saw the cover of it.
Is that at the very end?
We saw it earlier.
Right.
Because Prince Robot has... Oh, there it is. A Nighttime Smoke.
A Nighttime Smoke.
And it's this romance book.
It's a bodice ripper.
Yes. A Harlequin romance. between... It looks like a Landfallian woman. And a rock monster.
And I like how within this, you know, what a lot of very, very varying people within the story, from Landfall to Wreath, different layers of society would generally call like smut or not like good literature. Like,
well,
Alana's discovered like a new meaning to life and a new way to live.
Mm-hmm.
I love that idea that in this sort of nothingness, or where you wouldn't expect it, like, they've both found an alternative way.
It gets described as just stupid romances, the kind housewives buy at the supermarket. Half-naked dudes on the cover, you know? And, it gets described as, like, drivel, and there's no plot, and... all that, but for Alana and Marco, it's like their Bible, and we see them in a later volume, like, quoting it to each other as reminders of how they should live.
Yeah. At first I wasn't really understanding what was going on with that, but I just I think that was really cool, and I think, I mean, you know, I don't know if I would, I guess I can't say I always am like into it necessarily or whatever, but I like that. I feel like these comics, they're just just like graphic, or what would turn a lot of people away means, though, but they tell very heartening, deep stories, you know, that I And it's sad because I mean, it's just a lot of people I know. And I understand it. And it's not that I would recommend it to everyone. On the other hand, it's sad that the amount of people I know who would just turn away from it because
of the cover.
And well, the cover and then getting it a few pages in.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's so much there that one is just a good story mm-hmm. as far as being fantastic. And
so much of the rest of the art that is not like shocking and graphic is just really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And just their facial expressions mm-hmm. and the look in their eye that's caught is just so raw.
And it's like a technique that's used in a lot of comics and graphic novels. But I was looking today, and I just love how it'll go from multiple panels on a page, and the next page will just be like one full
to really scene emphasize.
To really hit mm-hmm. something. And all those are just very good moments.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and on the book, there's a scene, in that same scene you quoted where they're like, he's describing the book, or some other scene about the book. Ivy is asking the guard, like, did you read it? Because Alana had recommended, let her borrow it, or she's like, who has time to read anymore?
I highlighted that.
Yeah. I just love that too. I mean, one, because
it's funny because we read a ton.
We're reading all the time. And that's part of why I loved it. But then I also feel like it's another kind of aspect of the series too, is that they were able to. I mean, because I think later on, this isn't really spoilery, but later on we get to see, I think it's Landfall, and it's basically just like screens everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's Landfall, right? And it's like screens everywhere, everyone's like plugged in and stuff. And I feel like kind of a sub thing in the book, is in these comics, is that just the importance of books and of different media. Yeah. And not only books and disengaging, but just the importance of like family and people and
art
and building family. Mm-hmm. You know, that here Alana and Marco have procreated and they have their own family, but now they're adding Isabel, you know, mm-hmm. to their family.
Great, awesome, welcome to the family. Get us out of here.
Mm-hmm. And she really is, you know, and I feel like that's a huge part of it. Like, their alternative to mm-hmm. the war, you know, is their family and mm-hmm. adopting people.
Your family is not only who what you're born into, but who you choose.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And your family can be, and this is definitely explored a lot later, your family can be someone from the complete opposite side of everything from you. You can completely disagree on many major fundamental issues and still value and respect each
right.
other.
Right. It's not necessarily easy.
Right.
But it is at least possible.
Love is a choice.
Right. It is possible to try.
Yes.
At least.
Mm-hmm.
To want to.
As we say. To have the secondary desire.
Anything else? Yeah. Family. Pacifism. Death. Books. War. Sex. All the good stuff.
All that good stuff. If I talk too much more about it, I'm going to start talking about other volumes that we did not give spoiler warning for. I just love, though, the way that it ends. I'm going to glance at it again to make sure that the last one panel is.
It ends with IV, right?
I'm pretty sure it ends with the parents showing up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They, like, attack them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the last page is them standing there in their armor, like in shock, and just saying, oh, it says, and then my grandparents came to live with us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just such a casual phrase. And then my grandparents came to live with us. But they had just been fighting each other. And they zap Isabel. And she goes off into somewhere. Alana's shooting at them. They're running towards her like with an axe. And Mark was like, no, this is my wife and my baby. Like, oh.
Oh, then why'd you break your sword?
And it's just like the most anticlimactic cliffhanger ever that all of a sudden all the action stops. But I just desperately wanted to know what happened next. Mm-hmm. It's so funny. Juxtaposition. This series does a really good job with very artistic use of juxtaposition.
Right. All right. Yep. I think that wraps it up on Saga Volume 1. Mm-hmm. We are going to be going through the rest of it over the summer, kind of spread out. And then I think like October, the next volume should be up. I mean, the issues are already coming out, yes. But we've been reading it in the little books. So. For next week, though, we're going to take the rating back down. down to G. Or PG. Probably G, I'm assuming. The Incredibles 2 is coming out. And so we're going to be viewing and discussing that movie.
Because we have to. Next week. Because it's The Incredibles.
Right?
And I've been waiting for this sequel for so long.
Years.
So excited.
All right. Thank you guys for listening.
Don't forget to like, share, subscribe, rate. We're on iTunes, Stitcher. We have a website. I know, crazy. TheNaptimePod.com. We are .com, yes? TheNaptimePod.com. Give us likes, friends. It makes us happy.
We're on Reddit.
Oh, yeah, we're on Reddit now because we're cool.
Yeah. That's what that means. Mm-hmm. The Naptime Pod is our subreddit. So you can go tell us everything we got wrong about Volume 1 and then post your questions or thoughts on Volume 2.
Yeah.
It should be chapters 7 through 12.
Anything you want us to talk about? And as always, if there's anything that you think that we should read or watch and then talk about, do tell. Drop a comment on Instagram, Facebook, send a message, smoke signals.
We always want to know what the kids are into. I can't believe you just said smoke signals.
I did say smoke signals. Message in a bottle? Pigeon?
I think in this episode we should do a dramatic fade out while we're just talking.